This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. And coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Several villages are said to have been set ablaze in Cameroon's English-speaking southwestern town of Mamfe after armed separatists attacked military installations and killed four soldiers. The Cameroon government says it has seized three of the armed separatist training camps.
That's Moki Edwin Kenzeka reporting from Yaoundé. Full details on the story coming up. Also, a high-level forum has opened in Addis Ababa to discuss ways of restoring peace to war-torn South Sudan. And in the Gambia, a bill for National Reconciliation, Reparation and Reconciliation Commission has been passed by Parliament. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, several villages are said to have been set ablaze in Cameroon's English-speaking southwestern town of Mamfe after armed separatists attacked military installations and killed four soldiers. The Cameroon government says it has seized three of the armed separatists' training camps. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon Communication Minister and government spokesperson Issa Chiruma says for the past 2 weeks, military and armed separatist groups have been involved in bloody conflicts in the English-speaking southwestern town of Mamfe on the border with Nigeria.
Several suspects have been arrested. Large quantity of war and hunting weapon, as well as hundreds of military ammunition and uniform, have also been seized. One of those attacks has unfortunately claimed the lives of four of our gendarmes who were cold-bloodedly killed this Monday, December 18, in Kembok, a Yumojok subdivision in the Manu division.
Chiruma refused to give the number of armed separatists killed by security forces in ensuing clashes, but disclosed that at least three border villages that hosted training camps for the fighters had been liberated. Villagers say there has been an unprecedented harsh crackdown by the military, which also used helicopters to fire on civilians. Kembong resident Victor Arendip says his village and two others have been completely destroyed by the fighting and many people are dying.
They have bombed three villages. So everybody should be very careful with what is happening on the ground now. As I'm telling you, people are dying in their numbers in Mamfe.
Mamfe is a town in Manyu, an administrative area on Cameroon's border with Nigeria, where Cameroon says some of the fighters are trained. It has a vast expanse of forest, which the government says favors guerrilla warfare with hit-and-run tactics from armed separatists. The violence has pushed thousands of Cameroonians across the border to Nigeria since early October, when the separatists said they had declared their independence. Schools have been closed in most of the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions since November last year, when lawyers and teachers protested the overuse of French in the bilingual country. Violence erupted when separatists joined and called for complete independence. President Paul Biya has made it clear that he will not negotiate on separation, saying the country is indivisible. When the separatists started attacking military positions, he declared war on them, describing the separatists as terrorists. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
More than 700 Cameroon migrants who were stranded in Libya have been brought back to the Central African state by the International Organization for Migration. The migrants say they were seeking greener pastures in North Africa and Europe. Instead, they were robbed by gangs, arrested, and often forced into slavery. Again, Moki Edwin Kinzeka has more from Yaoundé.
These hundreds of youths are protesting what they call the slavery their peers endured in North Africa and are calling for the African Union to locate and punish those who allowed the migrants to be exploited. The protest took place Tuesday as a group of migrants landed at Yaounde Nsimalen International Airport. The migrants look exhausted and disheveled as they disembark from the chartered plane. Doctors are on hand to provide health screening and medical care, and psychologists try to help the migrants deal with the horrors they experienced. Psychologist Emmanuel Fu says most of the migrants were assaulted sexually.
Most of the women were raped, and even the men, they were raped. They are actually traumatized. So we meet them, we try to talk to them, and then we exchange with them and know their experiences. So from those experiences, we give them advice, necessary advice, to reboost their morals so that they are reinserted into their families, they are accepted back into their countries, and then they can continue their lives normally.
27-year-old Charles Tata is returning to the country he had wanted to leave at all costs due to hardship and joblessness. Unfortunately, he was arrested in Libya and subjected to indefinite detention in the Abdu Salam Detention Center in Tripoli. Tata describes his experience in Libya as 11 months of hell.
I was going to Italy. The boat that we were inside burst. We were on top of the water for 2 hours, 30 minutes without any rescue. People die in Libya because in Libya, everywhere is gone. They don't value blacks. If they saw you along the way, they just kidnap you and go and sell you to an Arab man.
Tata says he was released from prison when the UN Refugee Agency intervened, but he was taken to the town of Derna, where he worked on a cereal plantation for 2 months without pay. The IMO's Roger Charles Evina says his organization partnered with the government of Cameroon to bring back more than 700 migrants who volunteered to return.
Je voudrais d'abord remercier le gouvernement pour leur active participation. C'est très important parce que ça donne.
He says the migrants will be given $150 each to enable them buy food and gifts for their children, spouses and relatives who had been expecting much from them since they left, thinking that they will bring many things from their adventure. Cameroon says 120,000 of its citizens are illegal migrants. The country has created plans to give youths up to $5,000 to invest in agriculture and craftsmanship in hopes of convincing some of the migrants to return. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaounde.
A high-level forum has opened in Addis Ababa to discuss ways of restoring peace to war-torn South Sudan. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig speaks to analysts who say facilitators have a major task on their hands.
South Sudan's high-level revitalization forum is underway in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. The forum is aimed at reviving the country's 2015 peace agreement, which fell apart in July 2016 after clashes between supporters of President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar led to widespread violence. International Crisis Group senior analyst Casey Copeland says power sharing and security arrangements will be the key objectives of the forum. She notes that East African bloc IGAD has made it clear that the forum is not a mediation or a new round of peace talks, although the parties all want something different.
Rebel groups and most Western countries want the forum to be a new mediation. The goal is to, for them, is to create a new power-sharing arrangement, which significantly weakens the government's hand in favor of different opposition groups. The government, on the other hand, is quite keen that the existing arrangements are only slightly modified and that they remain in the powerful position.
Copeland says IGAD is put in the middle, trying to balance these demands. South Sudan analyst Alan Boswell notes that the peace deal was signed between two parties, but since that time, the opposition has fragmented, making the task of the peace mediators even more challenging.
It's not just that all the opposition groups want to, you know, take power themselves. They actually have different positions. in as much as the SPLA-IO under Riek Machar has been primarily interested in sort of taking power through elections after the rebellion failed in Juba, whereas some of these other groups now are more interested in sort of forcing a restructuring of South Sudan and gaining more local autonomy sort of away from Juba.
Copeland argues that the forum is focused on conflict prevention as well as resolution. She highlights next year's election as an example.
If it's held next year, that simply none of the groundwork has been done for it, and we may see competition within the government or amongst groups that have made a peace agreement with the government over who's going to stand as candidates in different places. And so the election itself poses a set of conflict risks that don't exist right now.
Tens of thousands of people have been killed in South Sudan, and 2 million people have fled the country since conflict broke out in December 2013. The United Nations has warned that more than 1.2 million people in the country are one step away from famine. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The UN Children's Fund reports an alarming rise in violence and criminality in Central African Republic, with children and women most victimized from the lack of security and humanitarian aid. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
As the year draws to a close, a look back at 2017 finds nothing but shattered hopes in Central African Republic. The UN Children's Fund says the year has been very difficult for children and women with little chance of improvement in sight. It says violence and instability continues to spread throughout the country. It notes the entire Southwest, which previously had been spared the crisis, is now the worst-hit region. Speaking on a telephone line from the capital, Bangui, UNICEF representative in CAR, Christine Muhigana, says some aid agencies at different times of the year have had to temporarily suspend their activities because of threats from criminals and armed groups. She tells VOA that children are losing out on many fronts, and 20% of the schools in the country are closed because of insecurity. She also notes violations of children's rights are on the increase.
We're talking about actual physical violence against children. We're talking about them being recruited in armed groups. We've seen such recruitment on the rise. We're also talking about attacks or occupation of health centers, health services that are being inaccessible to kids, to women in the areas where we have no access or where.
Muhigana says immunization campaigns against polio, measles, and other killer diseases have been disrupted in several regions because of lack of security. UNICEF reports more than 1.1 million people are displaced, both within the country or as refugees. That means more than one in five Central Africans have been forced to flee their homes since civil war broke out in 2012. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You were listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Several villages are said to have been set ablaze in Cameroon's English-speaking southwestern town of Mamare by armed separatists. A high-level forum has opened in Addis Ababa to discuss ways of restoring peace to war-torn South Sudan. And the UN Children's Fund reports an alarming rise in violence and criminality in Central African Republic. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. In the Gambia, a bill for national reconciliation Reparation and Reconciliation Commission has been passed in Parliament. Members of the National Assembly unanimously approved the bill, which seeks to bring justice to the victims of human rights violations under former dictator Yahya Jammeh's rule. Mr. Jammeh was in power for over 22 years. English to Africa reporter Panderambai reports.
Victims of human rights violations under dictator Yahya Jammeh's government will soon receive justice. This followed months of preparations by the Justice Ministry to draft a bill that will create the commission. Abubakar Tambedu is Gambia's Justice Minister.
The Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission Bill 2017 is envisaged to be an important vehicle, large-scale institutional, legal and administrative reforms in the Gambia. At the end of its operations, the Commission shall submit a report to the President of the Republic. The report will contain the findings and recommendations of the Commission, which are expected to strengthen and consolidate our burgeoning democracy.
The main man at the center of the investigations, former dictator Yahya Jammeh, is living in exile in Equatorial Guinea. He has been alleged to be behind widespread human rights violations, ranging from false arrests of citizens, abduction, torture, and in some occasions murder. Hence, Justice Minister Tambedu said crimes committed under Jammeh's era should not be allowed to go unpunished.
That impunity should not and must not be encouraged, and therefore that those responsible for these abuses should be prosecuted. On the other hand, the view expressed, and in many cases by victims, that the path to healing and reconciliation in our country is the establishment of the truth first and foremost. And both views are, of course, legitimate.
Tambedu also talked about the need to compensate victims whose rights had been violated.
This bill also seeks to establish and make known the fate of whereabouts of disappeared victims, provide victims an opportunity to relate their own accounts of the violations and abuses suffered, as well as grant reparations to victims in appropriate cases. Victims of human rights violations have a right to reparations as recognized under international law and laws of the Gambia.
Tambedu and his ministry have been touring the country to sensitize communities about the new TRC. They also made study tours to Sierra Leone and South Africa to learn firsthand how the two countries had managed to unite their people after decades of war. Mariam Jack Denton is the Speaker of Gambia's Parliament.
It has been moved and seconded that the bill entitled the Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission Bill 2017 be read a second time and considered. Those in favor, please say aye. Those not in favor, please say no. So the ayes have it.
Human rights organizations have hailed the passing of the bill. The US-based group Human Rights Watch says it is essential to identify commissioners who will be independent, impartial, and competent. For VOA Africa, this is Panderambai reporting.
Egypt officially has begun producing natural gas from its giant Al Zour undersea gas field in the Mediterranean. The field, discovered in 2015, is part of a colossal undersea reserve near Egypt, Israel, Cyprus, Lebanon, and Syria. Edward Iranian has more from Cairo.
Egypt's economic prospects are looking brighter after the long-anticipated production of undersea gas from the Al Zour gas field began coming online in recent days. Petroleum Minister Tariq Al-Mulla tells Arab media that the Al Zour field will be a major boon for the economy, saving $750 million to possibly several billion dollars a year in energy costs. He says that the giant Al Zour gas field has a reserve of 30 trillion cubic feet and the first phase of production of 1.2 billion cubic feet per day is expected to be reached around mid-2018, with production being ramped up to 2.7 billion cubic feet per day by mid to late 2019. Italy's Eni Petroleum Company is heading production of the Al-Zour field, while the BP company is overseeing production of another large undersea gas field off Egypt's Nile Delta region known as Al-Nuros. Al-Mulla told Egyptian media that the Al-Nuros field presents an unexpected bonus. Al-Mulla says he was expecting a production of 350 million cubic feet per day from the Al-Nuros field, but production has reached 1.1 billion cubic feet per day, which came as a pleasant surprise. Egyptian consumers use natural gas for cooking, heating, and running natural gas-powered vehicles. The government is also planning to produce more electricity with natural gas-powered plants now that water levels on the Nile are in danger of dropping from construction of a new dam in Ethiopia. Egypt's Aswan High Dam produces electricity from Nile water. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi recently met with the leaders of Cyprus and Greece to discuss the prospects of economic cooperation as Cypriot undersea gas is also brought online. Prospects of laying an undersea pipeline to Greece and exporting gas to Europe were also discussed. He says the discovery of energy in the eastern Mediterranean could be an important factor in achieving stability and peace, in addition to the fact that these discoveries could supplement the energy needs of Europe and diversify its energy sources, adding to the strategic importance of countries like Egypt and Cyprus. Contractual arrangements give Egypt 40% of the revenue from the Al-Zour. Georgetown University adjunct professor Paul Sullivan is cautious about Egypt's natural gas windfall, telling VOA estimates of possible reserves are sometimes off the mark.
What actually is natural gas in place is not the same amount of natural gas that can be taken out. And if they're talking about 500 million cubic feet per day, it's hard to judge. It could be 350, it could be 500, it could be 600. But there are lots of geological as well as other things that happen. And pressures change, and frankly, inside of gas fields, it's hard to tell exactly what you're going to get out of them within 5 to 10 years.
Sullivan says that Al-Zour is one of the biggest fields in the world discovered in the past 20 years, but he added there is also a lot of competition in the area, which could depress prices in the regional market. Israel has already been producing gas from its undersea natural gas reserves for some time, and Lebanon and Cyprus are in various stages of starting production. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Wickinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.